coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Tracy Morgan. Have a great day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 1230 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn, middle of the week already, July 11th. Open talk to begin the program today. We'll have guests later on the program, including Penn State Extension educator Craig Conforti will be joining us a little bit later on the program today. Open talk to begin with. The Butler County Commissioners are once again looking at and apparently are poised to implement a five-vehicle tax, $5 per vehicle tax that they say will bring thousands of dollars into our county to complete road projects. The $5 fee itself would be added to the vehicle registrations of almost every county resident and would be expected to bring in about $900,000, but commissioners say the mandate would also lead to state dollars and be used as leverage to possibly obtain a $25 million federal grant. So we'll see. Commissioners seem to think that their grant application would be more competitive if they show that the county has skin in the game and that $5 tax would do it. All three commissioners said they recognize the frustrations of taxpayers weary with yet another fee. It was discussed at this morning's agenda-setting meeting of the county commissioners, and they're set to vote on it next week at their regular meeting next Wednesday. What do you think about a $5 fee being attached to your vehicle registration now? If you own a car, or more than one, you know that you pay this registration fee every year. It used to be you got a little sticker to put on your license plate up in the corner, but they did away with that during the past year. Now you just get the invoice from the Department of Motor Vehicles, and you pay your money, and off you go. And what's the fee? Is it $36, or is that the driver license? I can't remember because I get them mixed up. I had to pay both of them this year. Driver's license expired as well. But this would be a $5 additional fee tacked on to that by the county commissioners. Now, they first talked about this some time ago, several months ago, and it didn't pass. But it's coming up again, and it looks like perhaps, we don't know until they take the vote, but it looks like all three county commissioners are going to be on board this time and approve it next week. So what do you think? Another $5 tacked onto your vehicle registration every year if the county commissioners, in fact, approve this. Now, they're saying that it will help them get more money for road projects in the future. I don't know. There's something new that the state allows counties to do if they so desire. I guess so. 283-2525 is our number if you have thoughts on this. 283-2525. Let's go to the people. Hi there, caller. This is Dave Mullarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yes, I'm against the $5 registration fee because they get the oil money still and they haven't done anything with that.
You mean from the natural gas, the fracking fee?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And then got one other topic that your brewer, the one that's for the voting, she wants to mail in votes.
Sherry Brewer is the director of elections, yeah.
Yeah, she wants, wouldn't that be more fraud than what there is now? I mean, right now, they should get in hand, like, if a person lives in Butler, then moves out to Pendleton, mm-hmm. they can vote twice because there's no way of telling, they take them off the board, take them off the thing.
Well, I'm assuming that with computerization nowadays, they'd be able to cross-reference that pretty easily.
No, they don't, because my daughter just did it. She didn't vote twice, but she could have.
Well, I'm talking about if they set up a vote-by-mail system. Some states have done this, by the way.
Yeah, already. But I'm just saying right now, it just happened last year. She moved, and she could have voted in Butler and then moved out in Chicor and voted again. Because they had earned both books still. There's no way to take it. They don't cross-reference where people move. So if somebody moves three different times and get registered there, they can vote then still.
Well, even if that stayed the same, I mean, how many people are going to do that?
Well, 96 people got caught last year voting fraud. How many people didn't get caught?
People are going to move just so they can register one more vote?
Well, they don't have to move. They just have to get an apartment. And with the way elections go, you don't think that fraud goes on?
No, I don't. I'm not sure that there's that much voter fraud in elections. I don't know whether that's ever been proven or not.
Well, if I get somebody mails the thing and I go get it, I can send it in. They wouldn't even know they got it. If you have the vote thing.
I don't quite follow you, but appreciate your call anyway. Thanks much, my friend. Thank you. 283-2525 is the number. Open talk on the program today. What do you think about an additional $5 tax being tacked on to your vehicle registration every year? County commissioners are considering it. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. How are you today?
Just fine. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. I want to let you know that I don't agree with the $5 tax.
Mm-hmm.
How about next year, then? They'll say, well, $10. You know, we'll make him go up $10. And when will that stop? So, no, you have a no vote for me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've seen fees increase like that or stick around forever sometimes. So I see where you're coming from. Thanks, my friend, for your thoughts.
Thank you. You're welcome. Have a good afternoon.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
283-2525. Your thoughts on an additional $5 to be tacked onto your vehicle registration every year? Butler County commissioners are considering it. Hi there, caller. What are your thoughts on this issue? It's your turn. Go right ahead.
Hello, Dave.
Hi.
Yes, I wanted to bring up something real quick from the recent past and a point on this new fee. Last I talked to you was about the ticks, the Lyme disease.
Mm-hmm.
Recall that, and then I heard you a couple days later said you researched it a little bit.
I looked it up, yeah. I'd never heard of that that island off the coast of Connecticut you were telling me about.
Yeah, well, I just didn't want to, I didn't know what I said there that would be considered a conspiracy theory or a tinfoil hat wearing type thing. It was just facts about known that that place is there and that, and, you know, you can go from there, whatever you might learn.
Well, I was just quoting from the article that I looked up online, and in fact, I have the headline of the story right here. Lyme disease on Plum Island, fringe conspiracy theory or a government cover-up?
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
That was the headline.
I'm titled like that myself, but the facts are there, that it's there, and you can decide what you want. I did just learn recently that the Army owns a patent, a U.S. patent, on Lyme disease, or derivatives of it also. So that's just another point about it, but do what you will with that information. But
why would the Army have a patent on Lyme disease? I don't understand that.
They have patents on different biological poisons and all kind of stuff, I guess.
You mean they were thinking of using Lyme disease as a weapon?
Well, yeah, bioweapon, yeah, sure. that, and I don't know what all, malaria and all kind of other stuff they've dabbled in. Took lessons from the Germans, as far as I know, but there's lots of stuff there. It's a deep rabbit hole. But
seems kind of strange to me that they got a patent on it. I mean, it...
mycoplasma, they call it, and then there's a whole, you know, it's a way more technical than that, but that's the mycoplasma. But anyway, this is the first I heard of this new fee the county wants to take from us. The county doesn't even have that much roadway. They have bridges, I know, small bridges, and very little roadway. I don't understand what these projects are for them.
Well, you're correct. There are a number of county bridges. I don't know the exact total mileage of county roads. There are some, but I don't know just what the mileage is.
Well, yeah, that's the first thing I thought. I knew they had the bridges and not many miles of roadway. But there's just no end. I mean, we have the highest budget ever in the state. What is it now, $32 billion and change now? And money going to just everything.
Well, that's the state budget you're talking about.
Well, yeah, but wasn't it just for, that's what I mean, the county doesn't have that much, or is it just for their bridges they want to redo, or do we have any specific knowledge about what they want to use it on, or they just say all our stuff, you know?
Highway and bridge projects is what I understand, and in some cases, a local government can provide match money, you know, and if they provide a certain percentage, then the state will kick in the rest of the money for a bridge project, or in some cases the federal government will kick in too if you have a local match.
Uh-huh. Well, then another lady said about the Marcellus Shale money too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that in the local. They spend that as fast as they get it. It's burned the hole. They have to go out and buy new $100,000 pickups and, you know, just on and on it goes. You can just, if you're alert at all, you can see how ridiculous it is how they spend money. And they just got, you remember the Volkswagen emissions scandal a while back?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, the federal, they fined them $30 billion and some change, and they're handing it out to the states. And I guess I've seen a couple different numbers. The one in Post-Gazette said PA was getting like $118 million of this fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then the federal, they're handing the different states are getting different amounts, and then the federal government's keeping some of it. But, and then I see what they're doing with that money. They're giving it out in grants. There's some guy in Cranberry. They're giving it to him to buy Teslas, electric Teslas, to start a taxi service or something. You know, there's all that money. If they're going to find them, if they're going to steal that money off of Volkswagen for, you know, this, a high crime, and they're just going to give it out. You know, if there's infrastructure needs fixed, how about, you know, looking at that first?
I hear you. I wonder where Volkswagen gets that kind of money to pay a fine. I mean, it's just a staggering amount, you know.
Oh, it put a huge dent in them. They're precarious now. And, I mean, that's money they could have used for R&D to make an even more efficient vehicle.
Well,
and the whole thing about the fine's ridiculous. It was a minuscule amount of stuff. It was nothing.
Well, they lied about their emissions program, correct?
Well, that was their worst sin, was they lied to the government, not the actual output of the emissions were a fraction of nitric oxide, just like basically nothing.
Your
car got 2 to 5 miles to the gallon more, and with the, you know, that setting, and plus run better. But their sin was just their lie. But, you know, you just see stuff like that. Well, is there no end to how much more money they have to take from us?
All right, my friend.
All these fees.
Appreciate your call. And thanks, by the way, for letting me know about Plum Island. I'd never heard of it until you brought it up on the program.
Well, I just didn't want to be defined as a conspiracy theorist on that. I was just relaying what I know and find out about it. And like I say, you can take it for what you will and make your own decisions on it, but that's interesting stuff there. So, all right, Dave, thanks for the time.
Good to talk to you, my friend.
Goodbye.
So long. 283-2525 is our number. Open talk today, 283-2525. Hi there, this is Dave Malarkey. Thanks for waiting. I know you've been waiting a while. Go right ahead, it's your turn.
Hi, Dave. My name's Gary.
Hi, Gary.
I wanted to tell you that I'm against the fee, and don't get me wrong. You know, $5, heck, I go out to the local breweries and I spend $5, you know, on a drink. Just that these guys stay up late at night thinking of new ways to get money off of us. And they probably did a survey and said, well, $5 isn't much. You know, that's there's probably a threshold that if they, you know, asked for $10, there'd be a lot more pushback. But, you know, $5, you think of that, well, you know, that's really nothing. But it's just that they're just constantly picking and picking. You know, when is it going to end where they say enough is enough as far as taxes or new inventive ways to get money off of us?
I'm assuming, and I don't have all of the details on this, and again, it hasn't been approved as yet, although it looks like it might well be next week. There would have to be some administrative costs to this. Now, I'm assuming that the state would automatically, you know, add $5 to every resident of Butler County who owns a vehicle, you know, whenever you get your vehicle registration fee invoice every year, that the state would just automatically add the $5 and then fork it over to the county. I don't know. But even then, there would have to be an administrative fee because, you know, you'd have to, first of all, you'd have to identify all of the Butler County residents and then, you know, tack on the fee to their card that you get in the mail. You understand what I mean?
No, I understand. So, yeah, so what you're saying is that they're really not going to get $5 by the time they implement it and do all the research and do all the, you know, the due diligence that's required to keep track of the money. So, again, you know, it's even less than $5. Mm-hmm. And it's nice that they're at least getting a kickback from the state, so it's not like they're just taking our money. So it was a way to get more money off the state also. But it's just that, you know, what point do they continue to tax before there's, you know, I'm not going to go the revolution thing, you know, but you just keep picking and picking against our pocketbook, and eventually it's going to be reach a threshold where, you know, people are going to say enough is enough. If they put this on a referendum, I'm pretty sure it would not get voted through, but, you know, they're not going to do that.
Yeah. Well, there are taxes, you know. The most infamous one here in Pennsylvania is the tax for recovery from the Johnstown flood, which was
imposed on...
Yeah, and
how long has that
been
going on?
It was 1936, I think it was imposed on the purchases at the liquor stores, the wine and spirit stores. And to the best of my knowledge, it's still there.
Right, so we haven't paid for that flood yet?
1936? Wow. I would think so. That's, what, 80-some years ago? Yeah.
Right. I appreciate you taking my call. That's just my 2 cents.
Thanks for your thoughts. 283-2525, the number. Your thoughts on the possible imposition of a $5 fee, a $5 tax that would be added on to your vehicle registration fee every year that comes from Harrisburg. The Butler County Commissioners are considering it, and right now they're scheduled to vote on it next week. Wednesday of next week, it was discussed at the agenda-setting meeting this morning, but the vote is now scheduled for next week, and it, you know, it looks like, from the conversation we've seen so far, that it's going to pass. It would bring in a little over $1 million initially to Butler County, but the county commissioners say they would hope to use that to try to leverage more state and federal money for road and bridge projects. In other words, they'd try to use it as a local match in order to obtain grant money. Now, it's been a while since I covered the county commissioners' meetings, but I seem to recall that for bridge projects, for example, if the county could come up with 20% of the cost, then the state would pay the rest, you know, 80-20. Type deal. So that's apparently what they're going to try to do, or what they're thinking about doing anyway. They considered this some time ago, sometime last year. I don't remember exactly when. At that time, it was defeated by the county commissioners, but looks like this time around, they may go for it. So we'll find out. Your thoughts on paying an additional $5 to register your vehicle each year? 283-2525 is our number, 283-2525. The last time around, commissioners got considerable pushback from the county on the proposal. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. It is the Wednesday edition. Nice to have you with us. We'll take a quick break and then be back with more of It's Your Turn here on WISR in just a moment. Well, it's here. They're going to be starting. Society of St. Vincent de Paul is going to be starting their weekly Saturday morning pickup of excess garden produce this coming Saturday. And they'll have a pickup every Saturday from 8 a.m. until noon at St. Michael Parish Hall. That's right behind St. Michael's Church on Center Avenue in Butler. So if you've got extra produce out of your backyard garden, and they're looking for extra, and obviously they don't want all of your stuff. But a lot of times when all of a sudden, you know, the tomatoes come on or the peppers come on, you got more than you need, even after you give some to the neighbors and Aunt Betty, you know. So consider donating your excess to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. It's a wonderful treat for those who rely on the food bank each week. Have fresh vegetables and fruits. And they've done this for several years now, and it's been a great success. Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Butler. The pickups start this Saturday. Just drop off your stuff Saturday between 8 a.m. and noon at St. Michael Parish Hall. And by the following Monday, it'll be in the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. If you need more information, you can call Lou at 724-991-6094.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us, we're going your way.
Butler Transit now provides weekday transportation to and from Pittsburgh for just $5 one way. No worrying about traffic or expensive parking fees, free Wi-Fi is also available. Park at a convenient park and ride, or hop on the bus at the downtown bus terminal. Senior 65 and up, ride free with a senior pass. For more information, visit butlertransit.com.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us, we're going your way.
It's open talk on this segment of the It's Your Turn program here on WISR for a Wednesday, July 11. Guests scheduled a little bit later on the program include Penn State Cooperative Extension educator Craig Conforti, scheduled to visit with us a little bit later on the program today. 283-2525 is our number. Let's get back to the people. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave. I'm a steady listener. Mm-hmm. And we're also on a limited income. We have two vehicles, so we don't need $10 more added to that.
Yeah, and there are many households these days where they have two vehicles, sometimes even more, and you would, you know, it would be $5 for each one because you have to
know that.
Pay a registration fee every year. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
283-2525. We haven't had a great deal of public feedback on this issue. I don't know. This is what happened the last time it came up. The commissioners got a good bit of blowback on it, and they ended up not approving it. But could be a different story this time around. And, you know, $5, as one of our earlier callers said, you know, you can blow that on a beer or, depending on where you go, I guess a cup of coffee. I don't know. I don't drink that expensive coffee. I know some of them cost nearly that much. But other folks say, hey, you know, a little nibble here, a little nibble there. Where's it going to stop? $5 is $5. And as one earlier caller said, if it's $5 this year, could it go up later? I don't know. I don't know. Obviously, this is something that the state legislature approved giving counties the option of adding this on. It's not something that individual counties can do of their own initiative. 283-2525, what do you think? Hi, caller, this is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Okay.
For the $5 raise.
You're not in favor of it either, huh?
No, sir.
Okay. Thanks, my friend. Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
283-2525. Nobody seems to be in favor of it yet. Hi, caller. This is Dave Malarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello. I'm not in favor of the $5 tax. And I was wondering, correct me if I'm wrong, but do Pennsylvania has the highest fuel tax, road tax, and wasn't the increase in road tax supposed to pay for roads and bridges?
Well, you're correct, but that was some years ago that was enacted. I can't remember which governor it was, Corbett, at least that far back. And in all fairness, we did see a lot of road and bridge work around, even in our immediate area, over the past 5 years or so. There's been a lot more done. But I hear what you're saying. I'm not sure Pennsylvania has the highest gasoline tax in the country, but it's certainly one of the highest.
One of the highest, yes.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, thank you.
Sure, thanks much. Bye-bye. 283-2525 is the number. What do you think about this proposed $5 additional fee each year on your vehicle registration? Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi. I don't like it, but I have something else to tell you that I don't think anybody will like, is instead of paying people to have kids, we charge them something for having them. That's our big problem.
How do you mean we charge them?
I think we should charge them for having kids.
Oh, you mean
charge them $5 kids, see how they like it.
You mean you should
instead
have to...
Instead, we're paying them, and they're giving them big tax breaks, feeding them from the time they're born till they die, almost, and all that stuff, and that's our big problem.
So you think we should charge a fee if you want to start a family?
Right. Well, that some of them just do it for the pleasure of it, that's all, and having a kid is an accident.
Well, your proposal is one that I've not heard of before. I'm sure that
I don't think people like it. Man, they're making a living off those kids. Okay, that's my thought for the day, and I'm sure people won't like it. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. 283-2525. Never heard that one before. Hi, caller. Dave Malarkey here. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Yeah, I say no to the $5 tax.
Okay. Have you made your opinions known to the Butler County Commissioners?
Not yet. I just heard about it now, listening to you.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I'm going to.
It looks like it's going to be on the agenda for their meeting next Wednesday for an up or down vote. So if you want to make your opinion known, you better do it pretty quickly. Thanks.
Okay, and I will. And thank you.
Sure. Thanks for
the
call. 283-2525. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hey, Dave.
Hi.
One thing about the $5 tax, it could be $5 on a Mercedes or $5 on a Chevy Cavalier.
Yeah.
So it's not. It's regressive against poor people.
Or $5 on a Yugo. Do they still make Yugos? I don't think so.
I don't think they do. That's probably what they're worth is $5, so you'd really be up in arms.
That's for people who don't know what we're talking about or laughing about. Yugo was probably the worst car ever made. And I'm not even sure that it was sold in the United States, but it was the laughing stock of Europe. I know they had them over there.
I thought they sold them in U.S. for a while because I thought they were making fun on Saturday Night Live. They had like a clay car. You know, and they were made in Yugoslavia, right? That's why they called them.
That's why they called them the Yugo. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, my friend.
All right, Dave.
It's a good point. Doesn't matter what kind of car you have, you know. You got a Mercedes or a BMW, a really, really expensive car. You'd pay the same as you have on a small subcompact. 283-2525, the number. Hi, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
I am not in favor of the $5,
mm-hmm.
but
since they're trying to get alcohol in all the stores now, why don't they tax that a little bit heavier, just like they did the cigarettes? They got everybody smoking cigarettes, and now they're taxing it high. Put it on the people that drink the alcohol.
Well, there is already, isn't there, a tax on alcoholic beverages?
Well, put some more.
Increase it, you say, huh?
Yes, why not?
Yeah, okay. Thanks, my friend. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we haven't had too many people in favor of this proposal. In fact, exactly zero. All of our calls have been opposed. We'll see what the county commissioners do. They're scheduled to vote on it Wednesday of next week at their regular meeting. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with more of It's Your Turn here on WISR Wednesday edition, right after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
You're about to whip up some delicious steaks, but the wind blows out your propane grill flame. First, turn off the gas and open the grill lid. Check your grill manufacturer's instructions for when it's safe to relight the grill, or leave the gas off and the lid open for at least 5 minutes before relighting. Never lean over the grill during lighting or cooking. For more advice, give us a call today.
Brought to you by the Pennsylvania Propane Gas Association and your local propane service providers.
Welcome back. A couple of program notes for you before our first guest joins us here on the It's Your Turn program today. First of all, we'll be joining Pirate Baseball in Progress immediately after our program today. It's the rubber game of a three-game series between the Pirates and the Washington Nationals. The Pirates won the first game a couple of nights ago. The Nats came back to win last night, so the rubber game going on here today. And we'll join that game in progress at 2 o'clock today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about the Butler Little Theater's summer youth production. That's something they've done for young people for quite a few years now, putting on a show in the summer when the Butler Little Theater regular program is down for a couple of months. So we'll get the details on that. And also, coming up shortly now, the Little League World Series, which is held every year in Williamsport, PA. Why in Williamsport? Well, I'm not sure, but we'll find out on tomorrow's program as we chat with a representative of the Little League World Series. Also, on Friday, we're looking forward to a nice chat with Brad Christman. He's with Radio Pennsylvania. That's our Harrisburg affiliate network here at WISR, and we get quite a few news stories from Radio PA along with the occasional special. So we'll chat with Brad Christman about that network, when it started, how they operate, and so on and so forth. That'll be on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We're also going to be talking about presidents and baseball. There are a lot of U.S. presidents who have had a great love for baseball down through the years. Kind of an interesting juxtaposition. We'll be talking with Kurt Smith about that. He'll be with us on the Friday edition of It's Your Turn. So, coming up, we're going to be chatting next about becoming a citizen scientist. A citizen scientist. Our guest in just a moment will be Mary Ellen Hannibal, and we'll be talking with her on the telephone on the next segment of It's Your Turn on WISR, and that'll be coming up right after this message.
Sports injury got you down? Sprains and strains or decreased range of motion making it difficult to enjoy your favorite activities? Try Lumix Laser Therapy, treatment offered exclusively by Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center. Laser therapy sessions are open to the public, so you don't have to be a chiropractic patient to receive treatments administered solely by Dr. Lucas. The goal at Applewood is to make this affordable for everyone by offering treatment packages in sessions of 1, 6, and 10. To learn more or to schedule your Lumix Laser treatment, call Applewood Chiropractic at 724-283-0518.
Listeners, we're going to be talking about citizen scientists on the next segment of It's Your Turn. Citizen scientists? Yeah, well, we'll find out all about it here. If you're just joining us, nice to have you along. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest visits with us by telephone. She is Mary Ellen Hannibal, and she, in fact, is the author of a new book entitled Citizen Scientist, subtitle Searching for Heroes and Hope in an Age of Extinction. First of all, Mary Ellen Hannibal, nice to make your acquaintance. I'm happy to be able to chat with you for a few minutes here today.
Oh, I'm very happy to talk to you too, Dave. Thanks a lot.
So, citizen scientist, I'm not sure that I ever actually heard that term before. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know from your book it goes way, way back.
It does go way back. I mean, you can put your marker for citizen science as far back as Aristotle, who had many opinions about how nature works, and he was not schooled in it. Even Charles Darwin is a citizen scientist because he was an amateur. He did not have an advanced degree, and he didn't work for any particular institution. Today, if you look at the specimens that are housed in most of our natural history museums, most of them were collected by amateurs, most of them that are more than 100 years old, because basically all scientists were amateurs before, about the beginning of the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something where just interested people have gone out and been very interested in nature and have collected pieces of it over the years. And today, citizen science is having a huge rebooming kind of revival, partly driven by technology. So we have this incredible thing called a smartphone that really enables us to all to contribute to scientific research and really have it go into databases that matter, where scientists are using those databases 24/7 all over the world. The other thing that's going on right now to really boost citizen science is that we really need to have an army of volunteers making observations about nature, because things are changing so fast with global change. And, as my subtitle indicates, we're in this terrible extinction. And the extinction is not just polar bears and elephants and far-off places going extinct, but we're losing lots of species right in our own backyards. So this is where we can help.
A little bit, listeners, about our guest, so that you know that she knows of what she speaks. Mary Ellen Hannibal is an emerging voice in environmentalism. She's a much sought-after speaker. Her writing has appeared in the New York Times, other newspapers, magazines like Esquire and Elle. She is an Alicia Patterson Foundation Fellow, a Stanford Media Fellow, and a recipient of the National Society of Science Writers Science and Society Award. I'm just thinking, because you mentioned the advent of technology and how that has added greatly to the ranks of citizen scientists today. Can you imagine if Charles Darwin would have had a smartphone or access to the internet while he was off the coast of Ecuador? Can you or Leonardo da Vinci, if he had access to the internet on a smartphone? My.
Well, I love it that you brought that up. You know, when Darwin was on the Beagle, and this was when he was in the Galapagos, he collected, and when we say collected in those days, they basically shot the things they took back. He collected about 30-something finches. Those are little birds. And he sent them to an ornithologist, a bird specialist back in England. And, he was trying to figure out how evolution works. And a key to that is different variations in species from different places. So the ornithologist wrote back to Darwin saying, where were each of these finches, which island did each of them come from? Because that would make a difference in understanding how they came to have different kinds of beaks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, dang it, Darwin had not noticed which island he got each of those finches from. So it actually took another at least 50 years, and then it was not until like the 1940s that scientists using finches that had been collected from the islands – figured out how Darwin's idea really, they quantified what Darwin was really only guessing at, which was that this mattered which islands they came from. Now, if Darwin had had a smartphone and an app called iNaturalist, he wouldn't have had to shoot the finches. He could have just photographed them.
Mm.
And the app would have assigned each photograph a date, a time, a latitude, and a longitude. So the ornithologist wouldn't even have to ask where they came from, because he would have known with incredible specificity exactly where and when that those finches occurred in this life. And that's the basis by which we really understand how life is unfolding.
And one more example that occurs to me, think about Audubon, who is not only a great bird watcher, but a very accomplished artist who was able to draw and paint all these very technical pictures of birds. If he had a smartphone, he could, in an instant, he could take a picture.
Well, you know, it's wonderful that you bring up Audubon, because he could have taken pictures. We still would want his beautiful paintings, right, because there's an emotion that we have and an engagement in a piece of art that we don't necessarily always have in a piece of scientific data. And this is another place for the citizen scientist in all of this stuff that's going on here in the world, which is to bring, you know, the root of the word amateur is from the Latin meaning to love. And so the citizen scientist is uniquely equipped to bring love and care and artistic expression to science, which I think it needs to have.
That's right. Moa Masa Mot. I forgot about that.
Oh, you're good. You got your Latin down. I'm impressed.
We're chatting, listeners, with Mary Ellen Hannibal, who, by the way, and before I talk about apps, if you're interested in becoming a citizen scientist, you are yourself. Tell us a little bit, because you detail this in your book, Citizen Scientist. How did you get involved in this, Mary Ellen?
Well, what a wonderful question for me to address. Thank you. So I'll take it two steps back to this book that I wrote in 2009 called Evidence of Evolution. And this is a collaboration with a wonderful photographer, Susan Middleton. And the book is an overview of evolution with photographs that she took of specimens from the California Academy of Sciences. And then I wrote that overview and then also evolutionary stories about each of the species that we covered. But when I was interviewing the scientists at the Academy, I was asking them to help explain how does life start, right? That's evolution. And they kept telling me, well, it's ending too quickly in too many places. And they were really drilling home that this mass extinction was going on. So when I really finally, you know, grokked that, I said, oh my gosh, I have to find a positive story to explain to people what's going on. And I found a fabulous story, which is my next book, The Spine of the Continent. That came out in 2012. And that's the story of Michael Soule, who's the quote-unquote father of conservation biology, and how he and many other people like Paul Ehrlich, Jared Diamond, E.O. Wilson figured out how life is coming into being and how it is expiring too quickly. But, you know, I trekked along the spine of the continent, which is the Intermountain West, the Rockies, and I highlighted species and people and efforts and what's going on with them. And I thought to myself, you know, God bless these people who are trying to save nature in their little NGOs, and these researchers at universities and colleges, they are not doing enough to save nature, because we need a lot more to go on to actually save nature. And I participated in some citizen science projects along the spine of the continent, and I thought this could really scale, because it was regular people. In one case, I learned with a group of people how to track jaguar in Mexico. It was really an amazing experience, and those people went back to Tucson, and they were assigned transects. Now, jaguar are coming back across the border into New Mexico and Arizona. They used to live there many years ago before we got rid of most of our top predators. But now that they're coming back, we have to create habitat for those jaguars because they're on the endangered species list. So those people in Tucson figured out, they learned how to track, and then they were assigned transects, and they go out every week, and they document where they see tracks, and they have figured out where the jaguars actually are moving and where they're living. And so those places are now identified as the places we want to protect. And this is what we kind of need to do everywhere, is figure out where species are and where they are moving, And scientists actually don't know that because there's just too many species and they're too dynamic. But we in our local communities, or we can go out on hikes, and, you know, I'm not going to be, I could track mountain lions here in California where I live. No jaguars are going to come here too anytime too soon. But that's where I realized citizen science, because it puts the power of helping in everybody's hands. So I came home to California and I just said, I'm going to start my new book on citizen science. And Terry Gosliner, who's a scientist at the Academy, said, great, well, why don't you watch us, you know, be an embedded journalist and follow as we develop our citizen science here at the Academy. So I've done that with them, and I've been on the Hawk Watch. I'm on my fifth Hawk Watch season over on Hawk Hill in Sausalito. Mm. And I also participated in a survey of Mount Tam with the Marin Municipal Water District, and that was really fun, plant surveying. It doesn't sound fun, but it is.
Listeners, we have a few more minutes, fortunately, to chat with Mary Ellen Hannibal. We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about some of the apps that people should know about if they want to get involved in this, if they want to become a citizen scientist. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR. Back right after these words.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
It's never been more important to stay in touch with the events and issues that shape our world. And for more than 25 years, Radio Pennsylvania has been the Commonwealth's source for stories and newsmakers impacting your life.
We're taking precautions to prepare for the worst that this storm can deliver.
And I believe that we need an armed, highly trained security officer in every school.
We should not be using mental illness as a scapegoat for things like mass shootings and violence.
Covering your state capital and all corners of the Commonwealth, Radio PA's team of award-winning journalists is on constant watch as your eyes and ears on the front lines of the major events of our time. Honored for broadcasting and journalistic excellence by
the Associated Press, the Pennsylvania Association of Broadcasters, the National Association of State Radio Networks, the National Headliner Awards, and many others.
8-time winner of the Joe Snyder Award for Outstanding News Service, the top news honor bestowed by the Associated Press in Pennsylvania. The Radio Pennsylvania Network, bringing you closer to Harrisburg and all of your Keystone State.
Welcome back, listeners. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is Mary Ellen Hannibal, author of Citizen Scientist, subtitle Searching for Heroes and Hope in an Age of Extinction. So can you give us some hard info, Mary Ellen, on what apps people should use if they're thinking about getting involved in this?
Sure. Well, you know, here's the most basic thing is to look at this website called SciStarter.com. So it's www.sciStarter.com. So SciStarter, or it might be .org, you'll find it. So you can search on this website in your state or by kinds of projects that you might be interested in and find projects that you can join. If you're just an individual person who wants to just go out and do things on your own, or everybody should have this on their phone anyway, my favorite is iNaturalist. So that's just how it sounds. It's a web-based program that has an app on your smartphone, or you can use your iPad. And this is, it's like Facebook for nature lovers. Mm. So what you do with iNaturalist is you take a photograph, essentially, with the app of a species that you see, a bug, a bird, a plant, and the app automatically gives it a date, a time, a latitude, and a longitude. Then you might know what it is. You might say, that's a Depia splendens. That's a kind of a plant. Or you may not know at all what it is. And if you don't know what it is, you can say you want help with the ID. And there's a community of people all over the world using iNaturalist all the time, and there's all these experts who are looking and they're identifying what you found. So it's actually really fun because you learn a lot using iNaturalist. So that is another extremely good one. A huge database for people to know about if you're a bird lover is eBird, and that's hosted by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. That's another incredible resource for lots of different kinds of citizen science, and some that you can really do at home in your own backyard, like feeder watch. You can do a little citizen science project in your own backyard by putting up feeders, bird feeders, and observing the birds that go to them at different times of the day. If you can use something called the Great Sunflower Watch, which you can find online, you just plant some sunflower in a pot, and for a certain amount of time a day, you observe how many bees come to it. And you put that data into this database, and you can help researchers figure out the bee colony collapse that's going on. Another thing, if you really don't want to go outside and you just want to be a couch potato citizen scientist, which is fine, there's lots of projects on something called Zooniverse. Zooniverse is pretty cool. So one of my favorite things on Zooniverse is a kelp project, and you can help ID where kelp forests are in the Pacific Ocean. This is something computers can't do very well. The computers can't discern what is kelp and what is something else, but the human eye can discern it. So just like Zooniverse has people identifying galaxies, you can identify kelp forests and help us sustain those populations.
Folks,
there's
a lot
really
of
many things.
A lot of people, they do this anyway, and you know, why not? If you have a smartphone, which most people do these days, if you have bird feeders, I know a lot of folks who do that here in western Pennsylvania, where they go out for a walk, you know, in the fields or the woods. You might want to think about this. You know, you're enjoying it anyway. Why not help out? And if you don't think that this is getting big, folks, well, Scientific American has devoted an entire blog solely to citizen science projects because, well, they're really sprouting up everywhere around the country, aren't they, Marielle?
They really are, and all over the world. And, you know, it's a huge thing. There's also kind of citizen mapping that is going on at the same time, and these two worlds of citizen science and citizen mapping are intersecting. So, and this also gets into really public health issues and community empowerment issues. So we all read about that terrible, you know, lead in the water in Flint, Michigan. Well, some researchers have helped the residents of Flint with a citizen science project to monitor their water. And this is another element of where, in our own communities, we can use these tools. So there's all the citizen science tools that I just mentioned. You can also look at Google Earth Outreach, and you look at something called Story Maps on ESRI, that's ESRI. These are free tools that you can use to help monitor what's going on in your community, wildlife moving through, wildlife living there, water quality, air quality. And this is where we start to really, you know, have more say in what goes on in our quality of life and help keep it really healthy, not only for us, but for future generations, for our children.
I wanted to take a moment and address the subtitle of your book, Citizen Scientist, Searching for Heroes and Hope in an Age of Extinction. We're really in such an age, Mary Ellen, where we're losing biodiversity at a rate that hasn't been seen since the disappearance of the dinosaurs? Really?
Thank you so much for bringing it up. It's really imperative that we kind of that we confront what's going on. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we see these pictures of these poor polar bears stranded on ice floes up in the Arctic, and we know that climate change is vastly reducing their habitat, and we're losing polar bears. But, you know, arguably, there's a worse kind of extinction going on all over the place, everywhere, and it's in our communities, and it's this decrease in populations of species. So a population of a species is just what that sounds like. It's a group of some animal or plant or bird or bug living in a place. Now, we're losing numbers of populations, so we may not be exactly losing a whole species of a certain kind of butterfly, but we are reducing the numbers of butterflies overall by just gigantic numbers. So, for example, there have been there's been a 40% reduction in the number of birds since the 1940s here in the United States, according to a new survey that's been done. And then vast numbers of reductions of marine animals and terrestrial animals. Still today, the biggest driver of these reductions is habitat loss for creatures. So where I live in California, the equivalent size of land of Los Angeles, which we know is this huge sprawling city, that equivalent amount of land has been developed in the last 10 years in the state of California. Now, I'm not suggesting that we're going to go forward here without development. We need to develop probably to sustain our populations. At the same time, we can develop land a lot more intentionally. If we know where species are moving and how and who's living where, we can just place our development so that we don't impede the flow of nature. Another example from California, someone just told me about an oak woodland that was being converted to make way for a vineyard. Now, we probably want more vineyards. We want more wine. I know I do. But we don't want to put a vineyard where an oak woodland is, because an oak woodland is an old, beautiful habitat host to many, many native species. You've got the same kind of situation in Pennsylvania. You want to know, where do you have your native species? Where do you have rich species populations? And you want to protect those areas. You also want to make sure there's flow or continuity, or what the scientists call connectivity, between your protected areas, so that as the climate is warming, the species can move to where they need to go to find water and cooler climes. And how you can figure out where they're moving is by documenting where they are with your smartphone.
Lots of good stories, too, in this book, listeners. Our time has run out, but one interesting one was, in fact, you were witness to this. You were in California hearing a talk by an archaeologist who discussed way back in the 1700s how the Native American Indians of that area used fire to manage natural resources. And everybody knows the stories of wildfires in California these days. It seems like every year now. And a lot of people suggest we're going about it in the wrong way. Maybe we should look back to the way the Native American Indians of that era were doing it. Those sorts of stories in this wonderful book, listeners, Citizen Scientist by Mary Ellen Hannibal. Mary Ellen, do you have a website where people could find out more about you?
Yes, please, MaryEllenHannibal.com. And there's a contact form through there, and I blog. I don't blog too often, about once a month, so you can sign up for my blog. And just keeping my finger on the pulse of natural history here.
I've kept you a little too long. I apologize for that, but it was just too interesting.
Oh, no, I could talk a lot longer, and I really appreciate your incredibly good questions. I'd love to talk about the Native Americans sometime.
Oh, maybe we'll do that, Mary Ellen.
I would love that.
I may be back in touch. Mary Ellen Hannibal, our guest. Thanks again. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Sure. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program today is Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. They package your items for shipping. Very, very convenient. And you can ship any way you want. I mean, you know, that's still your choice. They'll package them up, and you can ship U.S. Postal Service, FedEx, UPS, your choice. Also at Gone Postal Butler, they offer copying service, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals. They've even got local honey there. It's delicious. Located just off Newcastle Road, behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants, Gone Postal Butler is in the Shockey Mini Storage Center. They're open Monday through Friday. Phone them at 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Well, we move on to the next segment of It's Your Turn now here on a Wednesday. And if you're just joining us, that's fine. Dave Mullarkey is my name. Our next guest is joining us by telephone today. He is a client relations manager for Penn State Extension, and he is Craig Conforti. Craig, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us on the program today. Hello, is this Craig?
Yes, it is.
Yes, Craig, Dave Mullarkey here. Nice to have you with us on the program today.
Hey, sounds good. Thanks, Dave. Appreciate being on the program.
Under the new model of Penn State Extension, we have educators and client relations managers that are based in one county but responsible for several adjacent counties. And you are responsible for how many, Craig?
I'm responsible for 7 counties. So Beaver, Butler, Lawrence, Mercer, Crawford, Venango, and Erie. So like the 79 corridor, shall we say.
You have quite a geographic footprint that you've got to cover there. That's quite a large territory.
Yeah, it is. It's challenging, but it's trying to do the best with the tax dollars that we receive. So trying to, kind of take care of some redundancy and make it be more, more conscious of the tax dollars and trying to get the best out of the money that's spent.
Mm-hmm. We had a pretty important visitor at Butler County Community College here in Butler within the past week or so. Tell us who came to visit and what was that meeting all about?
Yes, so PA Secretary of Agriculture, Russell Redding, was here. And so it was pretty exciting to have him out on the community college grounds. And the purpose of the meeting was, he was discussing PA's recently passed budget, and there was a historic $5 million put in grants that's available for dairy producers. It's a tough time for our dairy farms, not only just in the state, but in the nation as well. So the $5 million in grants is available for our producers, and some research and development opportunities are going to come out of that, along with help transitioning into the organic market, and also some marketing for milk too. So it was a pretty productive town hall meeting that was held that was last Monday, and the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau was there. So Butler Farm Bureau representatives were there, and that was nice for them to be able to represent some farmers here in Butler County. And then also, Penn State Extension was there. There were some local farmers there. Mr. Marburger was there. So it was a nice collection of people talk. And that's basically what it was, a frank conversation about the current state of dairy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was nice that the secretary came out and talked.
I know that dairy farms, many of them are living on the edge. In fact, from what I understand, some are actually losing money. It's costing them more to produce the milk than they're getting from it.
It is, and it's a pretty steep decline in the price of milk, and frankly, we just have a oversupply of milk, and it's you have those ups and downs in the market, and hopefully there's a way through the Penn State Extension and through the state that we can come and provide some assistance. So the $5 million going towards some of these programs. Hopefully is a good start.
So part of it earmarked for research and development of additional dairy products or refinement of some of the products we already have. What would that be, Craig?
Yeah, that's what they're looking at. Right now it's not really defined what exactly they're going to concentrate on, but it'd be safe to say that the research and development would be additional products. I know there's been talks in the past about more cheese facilities, the possibility of being value added products being able to locate here in Pennsylvania. But it just again, it just depends on the market and whether or not a plant. It's a lot of cost involved in pulling a plant into the state. And so whether we could get, local governments on through to the state government or even federal government to put some assistance in to be able to make it advantageous for those companies to locate here. I mean, we definitely have the milk. We have the farmers. We just need some of those, some company and manufacturer to seize the opportunity and come in. It would definitely help our dairy farms, that's for sure.
Yeah, cheese is becoming more and more popular, a wide variety of cheeses. A lot of folks like cheese with wine, wine and cheese parties. So hopefully
that could be hand in hand.
could be an area, even though the market for milk is apparently down. Don't schools offer a little half pint of milk on a regular basis with the school lunches? Boy, that was a staple whenever I was a kid. You always got a little carton of milk with your lunch.
Well, they do, and that was something that Mr. Marburger brought up, because right now, under the new MyPlate guidelines that was passed under President Obama's administration, they have taken whole milk and, from what I understand, whole chocolate milk out of schools. And the idea, of course, is calories and fat content, even though that's not entirely... there's the studies go back and forth between milk being good for you, bad for you, or good for you. And, mm-hmm. of course, that's the federal government's idea. They're trying to limit the calories and fat intake for our children. And, I know it's a bad way of going about it, and being able to take that out of schools is, in my opinion, a bad idea. And the milk that they replaced it with is the 1% skim, mm-hmm. and not a lot of children enjoy drinking 1% skim. That's what Mr. Marburger was talking about. How if you go and you look at the trash cans at the end of the lunch periods, there's a lot of unopened milk cartons that are just being thrown away.
Hmm.
Wow. Another thing that was talked about at the meeting, a commissioner from Venango was talking about how they passed a resolution for their prison to start purchasing milk. And so that, any way that individuals can help the dairy industry, it's a great thing.
Yeah, and if you're a dairy user, as I am, I've liked milk since I was a kid, hey, purchase local if you can,
Yeah, exactly.
Help out your local.
The best way to do that is, I'm sorry, the best way to do that is there's a code on milk. Now, when you see the 42, excuse me, that shows that the plant is here in Pennsylvania. But to ensure that you're buying Pennsylvania milk that's raised here and produced here is to look for the PA Preferred logo.
And that's right on the carton or the plastic bottle or whatever?
Yeah, exactly.
Or you could just buy Marburger, which is what I do.
True story. That takes all the guesswork out of it.
How are you going to get it any fresher than from a dairy producer that's right here in Butler County, for goodness sakes?
Right.
I don't know how you could possibly get it any fresher. Well, it was a real treat to have the State Secretary of Agriculture visiting last week here in Butler, and that's good news about a $5 million appropriation in the newly approved state budget, which was approved on time this year, by the way, to hopefully help local dairy producers. We're chatting, in case you're just joining us, with Craig Conforti. He is a client relations manager for several counties through Penn State Extension. I understand there are quite a few extension events happening here in Butler in the not-too-distant future. Craig, can you talk about some of those?
Yeah. The first one is a ServSafe class. And
I've heard about these. This is for, church groups and fire halls and so on that prepare meals or treats for a large number of people.
Well, we have a volunteer-based one, and then we also have the ServSafe class. Same concept. The ServSafe class is geared towards because you need a food protection manager certification in Pennsylvania.
Mm.
So anyone who needs to meet the PDA requirements for food safety certification, this class is perfect for them. So, your restaurant managers, your food service managers, the things that you'll learn there is how to safely prepare food and how to safely store, handle, and purchase food, personal hygiene, how to manage pests, how to clean and sanitize your facility. So there's a lot of good information here.
So this is required under Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture regulations for restaurants?
Yeah. So under the FDA food code, it requires a person to be a certified food it's a certified food protection manager, and that's required by the Pennsylvania Food Employee Certification Act.
Where will this Serve Safe class be held, and is advanced registration necessary?
Yeah, advanced registration is necessary so that the instructors can purchase the needed material. And the first class is Tuesday, October 18th, but the registration deadline is by October 16th, 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And the it's going to be held at Penn State Extension office in Butler County, so it's 101 Motor Pool Way. And then that's Butler, Pennsylvania, 16001.
Mm-hmm.
So right at our extension office.
And for folks in our immediate area, that address is it's within the Sunnyview complex, right outside
yes,
of Butler.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's the Serve Safe class. Also coming up is something called Mediterranean Cuisine. Well, that sounds interesting. Makes me hungry just to think about that. What's that all about, Craig?
That's my thoughts exactly when I first saw the class. That's something that I want to attend personally. So the class, of course, anyone interested in eating well, that's who this is intended for. And the things you'll learn is how to cook and prepare food that fits the Mediterranean lifestyle, how different Mediterranean foods taste, olive oil, cheese, vegetables, and seasoning. The instructor also goes over some useful cooking tips. And then one of the days, the latest information from local food growers and producers come in. So they talk about, you know, tasty green and vegetable preparations and health research and local cheeses. And the class is going to take place, the first date is Monday, September 10th, and it's going to be four Mondays. So Monday, September 10th, the 17th, the 24th, and October 1st. And they are taking place in Cranberry Township at the Schneider Family YMCA.
Mm-hmm. I've heard things, read things, wire stories about the benefits of a Mediterranean diet. Not only that it tastes good, but apparently there are some pretty good health effects that can come from a Mediterranean-type diet.
Yeah, that's true. From what I understand, they have a considerably lower heart disease issues than we do of a, I don't know if you want to call it, I guess, an American eating style. I'm not quite sure what that is, but I know that the Mediterranean lifestyle has that ability. Some of it comes from the olive oil. You know, olive oil has a lot of healthy properties as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's from what I understand, the type of food, how you prepare it. And that's what's nice about this course, because it talks about those principles and how to design your own healthy lifestyle based on, and then we also take a kind of a snapshot of local foods. So that's one of the nice things about the local produce producer that would be able to come in and talk to everybody so that you get an idea of where to find foods that fit this lifestyle.
Now, is this open to anyone, this Mediterranean cuisine class?
It is. It's open to anybody that's interested, and our deadline for that one is September 9th.
And that's going to be taught right here in Butler. Now, you also have a program coming up on equine environmental stewardship. This obviously for people who have horses, right, Craig?
Yeah, correct. So this class is it's a regional class, so it's going to be in Elizabeth, Allegheny County, and it's going to be at the Round Hill Park and Exhibit Farm. And we're putting it on in conjunction with the Conservation District of Allegheny County. And different things, I mean, the scope of people who should be interested in attending the class, if you're considering purchasing a horse, excuse me, or a horse farm, or currently own a horse, We're also looking for people that manage horses for others or work with horse farm owners. So if you're in the industry and you work with some horse farm owners, then this class has some pertinent information. And the things that you'll learn would be like forage biology, forage species, grazing management, pasture renovation, weed and toxic plant management, other things like fencing and manure risks and benefits. So kind of a wide breadth of different information that you'll learn on it.
And is there a registration deadline for this session?
Yeah, the registration deadline for this one's in July, so it's July 29th. And this class also has a, let's see here. Yeah, so this one also have a nice lunch provided. So I thought so. I just wanted to make sure of that.
We'll take a quick break. We have a few more minutes to chat with Craig Conforti. He's with Penn State Extension. And he's our guest here on this segment of It's Your Turn on WISR. We need to take a break, though, so we'll be back and talk more with Craig right after these words. If you're a Butler Area School District employee looking for a new pharmacy after the recent insurance change, Institute Hill Pharmacy is your answer. They can fill your prescriptions in just 10 minutes. They take your new insurance plan, they stock a variety of over-the-counter medications, and they pride themselves on fast, friendly customer service. Institute Hill Pharmacy, serving Butler for over a decade. They're ready to serve you. Stop by their store on East Jefferson Street or find them on Facebook. Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The midday pick 2 is 94, 94. Pick 3, 828, 828. Pick 4, 4712, 4712. Pick 5, 387, 48. The wild ball for each of those is 9. The treasure hunt, 11, 15, 17, 21, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt, $26,000.
Ah, the 1960s in Butler. Groovy music. The summer of love. They were simpler times. And when Friday nights would come around, the kids stormed the dance floor at Funorama, the Tumble-In, and the Purple Underground. Relive those groovy nights with the Dream Dance on Saturday, July 14th at Butler's home for entertainment, the Tanglewood Center. Join WISR's Mr. 60s, Bill Reichert, and Dave Martin for a night of swinging tunes. Doors open at 5, buffet dinner by Chef George at 6, and the dancing starts at 7. As always, it's BYOB. Tickets are $25 per person. Call 287-0021.
Yep.
Welcome back, friends. If you're joining us a little bit late on It's Your Turn today, welcome. Dave Malarkey is my name. Our guest on this segment is Craig Conforti. Craig is a client relations manager for Penn State Extension. And he covers several counties, Butler County and several other counties in western Pennsylvania. And by the way, Craig, is a client relations manager, is that a new position, a new designation under the Penn State Extension model? Because it's something that I've not been familiar with.
So it's the position itself is probably about a year old. And it is a new position. Usually the counties used to have district directors.
Mm-hmm.
So every county, you know, not too long ago, every county had a district director. And then Penn State went to kind of a regional model with three counties. And then that turned into five counties. And the next step after the five-county model was to launch with the CRMs and then so that your client relations managers, and then there's my counterpart, is the business operation manager. And so he works alongside me and does more of the finance side from in my seven county area.
Mm-hmm. And your responsibility as a client relations manager is to kind of be the, kind of be the face of Penn State Extension in your region?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And the whole idea is, you know, we're going out there and making contacts and spreading the word about Penn State. I mean, even though we're as a Landscript College, we are extension's been around for a long time. Some places in the state of Pennsylvania have been celebrating their 100th anniversary. But we've been around for a long time, but a lot of people don't associate Penn State Extension, and especially with the wide variety of classes that we do. You know, a lot of a lot of times when you hear Penn State Extension, you think of agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
But we do so much more than just agriculture.
Yeah, and that's one reason why we like to talk to the various Extension representatives, because it is quite a changed model, and you certainly don't have to have a farm to be interested in many of the programs that Penn State Extension offers. Plus, under the new model, we've been able to meet so many other people. You know, it used to be, as you said, each county had a district director. At one time, they were called agents, Penn State Extension agent. And then there would be maybe two or at the most three Extension educators in each county. Now it's more of a regional thing, and so you can spread the expertise of these educators over several counties, and we've been able to meet many of them over the past many months. Maria Graziani and Susan Bosser and Ginger Fenton and several others who have chatted with us, Darlene Sassone. So it's been good. I think the new model is working well. I want to talk a little bit more about...
Yeah, thank you. Exactly right.
Yeah, I think it's great. And, of course, it's more fiscally responsible, too, from that standpoint of the university. Talk a little bit about online courses, because I know that many of the programs, many of the classes, many of the courses that had been offered by Penn State Extension are now going online, and that certainly makes it more convenient for the consumer, because they can contact these programs according to their schedule instead of having to be at a certain place at 1 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. Can you give us some examples, Craig, of Penn State Extension online courses?
Yeah, sure can. And you're exactly right. You know, one of our ideas is to be able to deliver science-based information wherever our clients are. So, and a lot of times online is the best way of being able to reach a wide audience. So that's kind of the reason why with the Extension's new website and our new online courses that we're trying to take that direction, just to be able to increase our reach in the population. But some of the examples, farm biosecurity, it's a two-section class, and the length is 2 hours and 30 minutes. And what's nice about this is it's best practices for contractors, vendors, and visitors. So if a farm is practicing, and they surely should be, if they're practicing proper biosecurity, then there's certain steps that individuals have to go through to be able to gain access to that farm. And, the whole idea is to prevent different biosecurity, different diseases, and other things from spreading from farm to farm. And if you follow those best case practices, we can avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
So the online course is really nice for especially anybody that comes on, any contractor that works on the farm, to be able to teach their employees the proper steps.
And we've seen this in many other parts of the world where it's been a disaster, something like mad cow disease or avian flu or something like that. It can be a financial, horrendous financial situation for farmers.
Yeah, it sure can be. And the other thing, too, is, we want to make sure and I personally believe that the United States has some of the most secure food system, and we work hard to keep that possible, to make sure that consumers have confidence in our farms and in our food systems. So it's a nice level of practical information, and it's just an intelligent way of going forward.
Mm-hmm. What about other online courses, Craig?
So some of the other online courses that we have are like getting involved in your Pennsylvania local government, working with volunteers. We have a course for food for profit. Another good example that we have is a woodland stewardship. Like different things, you know, we have a retail farm market school. The one for getting involved in your Pennsylvania local government, there's four sections for that. The length is 4 hours. And it's our duty as citizens to understand how our local governments work. And it also goes through exploring ways for you to become involved, explains how to run for office. And I think it's, you know, coming from my background as a political science major, I really believe that this is a well-done class and something that citizens should know.
How can we stay current with the local classes that Penn State Extension offers here in Butler County, Craig?
So either follow our Facebook page. We'd like to put a lot of content on there about classes that are coming up or different Penn State research. So that's just to name a couple. And you can find us on Facebook at Butler Extension. Another way is through just our Extension website. So Penn State has a nice new web-based platform. And if you search Butler County Extension Office, then you can go through the portal that way or just simply type in Penn State Extension. And if you go through the Penn State Extension, you can see the different list of online courses and as well as classes that are local.
Can people opt in to have specific information that they might particularly be interested in and get it like emailed right to them?
Yeah, they can actually. So if you go to Extension's website, there's a spot where you can click on them that's called the tag is About Me. So it's extension.psu.edu, then /About Me. And by clicking on that, you fill out some information, put your email in, your home address, and how you prefer to be contacted, whether you want to have things sent to your house or have stuff sent to you by email. And you can click on, there's different punch categories that you can click on, from market gardening to blueberry information to local government information. And it just depends on your interests. So that's what's really nice about it. If you click on something like, take blueberries, for example, anytime there's a class on pruning or how to market your blueberries or possibly pests that might be active in the area, you get emails on that information sent directly to you. So instead of having a lot of information that you have to sift through that maybe not be pertinent to you, this way you can kind of tailor your experience and get the information that you're really looking for.
Sounds good. Craig Conforti is a client relations manager for Penn State Extension. His territory includes Butler County and also six other counties here in western Pennsylvania. First time we've had a chance to chat with Craig. Craig, nice to meet you. Thanks for being with us and sharing information here today.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you. Thank you for having us on, and you know, really appreciate it. Looking forward to the next time.
Indeed, me too. Thanks again. So long.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
Craig Conforti from Penn State Extension. So that wraps up our program for today. We thank our earlier guest, Mary Ellen Hannibal, and we had a good discussion as well early on the program today about the proposed $5 fee that the Butler County Commissioners may be approving next week. They're scheduled to take a vote on it. It would be a $5 fee added on to your vehicle registration every year, which comes to you, of course, in the mail through the Bureau of Motor Vehicles. So we could talk about that some more later in the week or perhaps next week when the commissioners take action on it. They're scheduled to vote on it next Wednesday. Coming up, we have Pirate Baseball here on WISR. You're listening to 680 WISR, Butler, Pennsylvania. It's 2 o'clock.
We join the Pittsburgh Pirate broadcast in progress in the bottom of the fifth, Pirates leading 2-0.
This is your